Ne?
Good morning. May it please the court. Mr. Lloyd. Again, I'm Andrea Smith on behalf of the appellant Curtis Fair, who asserts that the district court here erred in finding that he violated the conditions of his supervised release by committing the new crime of home invasion and aggravated battery. Now, of course, I realize and I have recognized in my brief that I carry a heavy burden here since credibility determinations are given great deference by this court, but I based the assertion here that the district court found that a key defense witness, this Reneal Smith, who of course, by the way, is not related to myself, was not credible based on a number of issues. Now, those are outlined in my brief, and I don't know if I need to repeat the facts there. I think I've spelled out why the court erred in speculating that Reneal Smith, this defense witness, as the district court stated, he was maybe possibly part of the three-man posse that picked up my client after the home invasion aggravated battery. There was no evidence whatsoever to support that speculation by the district court. So the district court was making a speculation that this key defense witness was actually part of the crime that was committed here without any evidence to support that speculation. The district court erred when it relied on that speculation and found that this key defense witness was not credible. The other part of the argument, of course, is that this district court misremembered the testimony. The district court misremembered and misstated what Reneal Smith, the key defense witness, testified under oath, was that during the critical time period between about 11 o'clock in the evening, when this crime was supposed to have occurred, and 11:45, Reneal Smith testified that, of course, my client, Mr. Fair, was in his presence at all times. He specifically responded to a question by Mr. Lloyd on cross-examination saying that he was in his presence at all that time. And what happened is the district court misread the testimony and said that Reneal Smith was vague about the critical time period when, in fact, Reneal Smith was not vague at all. He testified quite confidently and assuredly that my client was in his presence during that critical time period at all times. There was, of course, another couple of witnesses who testified that my client never left the bar, Rip's Tavern, that evening for more than 5 minutes. And one of the things that was not brought out in the brief that I would like to focus on a moment, if you recall, the facts here was that the victim, Janet Rhodes, testified and called the police that someone came into her house with a home invasion and committed aggravated battery on her between about 11 o'clock, 11:30. It's not clear exactly when. She said she testified around 11 o'clock. If you recall, the U.S. probation officer, Krista Riglioso, who testified on behalf of the government, said that this bar was about 5 minutes from the victim, Janet Rhodes' house. So, assuming that my client did do this, he would have to get in the car at the tavern, drive 5 minutes to Ms. Rhodes' house, that's 5 minutes, and then drive back, that's another 5 minutes, that's a total of 10 minutes. And then if you recall the testimony of what occurred at the house, Ms. Rhodes testified, and Mr. Wrigley also testified as well, this is what Ms. Rhodes told her, was that supposedly my client was standing in the yard yelling up to the second floor, yelling at Ms. Rhodes, the victim's nephew, to get an adult, get someone to open the door. The nephew then goes and calls his mother and says, "Mom," and this comes into the testimony of my investigator, Brenda Tripp, "Mom, there's a guy out there yelling, and I can't get my aunt, Janet Rhodes, the victim, to wake up." So he's phoned, they're yelling in the front yard by, allegedly, the home invader, the aggravated batterer. The nephew's been calling on the phone. Someone then breaks down the door, comes in with a gun, and is yelling at Janet Rhode, who then wakes up and is on the couch. He's yelling at her and screaming at her, why did you break in why did you commit a burglary? And then, according to Janet Rhodes and Krista Rigliosa's testimony, this person then drags Janet Rhodes out of the house, down the stairs, by the way, in the process, having shot two shots down the stairwell at this fellow Huck who came and yelled up at the stairs and asked if there was any, if Janet Rhodes needed any help. Then the assailant drags the victim down the stairs, drags her outside the yard, where another woman comes along and says, what's going on here? And the assailant then waves a gun at her, and she backs off and says, I don't want anything to do with this. The assailant then hits Ms. Rhodes, allegedly, in the head 5 times with the gun. So that entire period of time, from the point when the assailant shows up in the yard and is yelling at the boy, breaks down the door, shoots at Mr. Huck down in the on the first floor, yells at the victim, drags her down the stairs, drags her outside, hits her in the head with the gun, threatens someone else with the gun, and then finally jumps in the car. Let's assume that at minimum that takes at least 5 minutes, more probably 10 minutes. So what we're looking at here is a 15 or 20 minute time period that would have been required by my client, Curtis Fair, that he needed to have gotten the car, driven over there, done that, and gotten back to the tavern. Now, the testimony of Miss Schooler, my client's girlfriend, says he never left the bar more than 5 minutes, went outside for a cigarette, went to the bathroom, never left for more than 5 minutes. Mr. Renewal Smith said during the critical time period from 11 o'clock to 11:45, my client was in his presence that entire time, could not have possibly left for 15 or 20 minutes to go commit this act. So,
but the problem you have here, and of course you would agree that the district court had to weigh the testimony of these witnesses and make certain determinations, and even if, and I tend to agree with you that as to at least one point there wasn't support, you know, as to whether he was a gang of three, but let's give you that. You still have to deal with the testimony of Janet Rhodes.
Yep.
And the district court found her testimony credible. And that was the eyewitness testimony. She was the victim. I mean, I appreciate all these other things you're arguing, but I think that's a problem for you. Maybe you want to comment on that.
One of my favorite questions up here, Judge Williams, is when I come here and say, well, even if we give you that, isn't it harmless error? And, of course, that's what you're asking. And I would suggest that this court cannot give approval of a district court making a credibility determination based on speculation and a misreading of the testimony. So I assert it's not harmless error. At the minimum, this should be reversed and remanded for a new hearing with the directions of the district court that it not speculate about the involvement of a key defense witness in what occurred that evening. And to remember correctly the testimony. So I assert
exactly what is the precise point of misapprehension.
The district court stated that Mr. Reneal Smith was very specific about a lot of his other testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Was very specific about his other testimony, but when it came down to the critical time period, Judge Ripple, he said he was very vague about the time period. And what I assert is he was not vague at all. It's laid out, spelled out in my brief. He was not vague at all. He said during that critical time period from 11 o'clock to 11:45, when it was uncontroverted testimony that my client then left the bar, he never left his presence. And that was in response to a question on cross-examination from Mr. Lloyd. So when the district court asserted, oh, he was specific about his other testimony, but he was vague about the time period that was critical, he wasn't vague at all.
Then going back to Judge Williams' question, could it have been a matter of inflection or could it have been a matter of the witness demeanor?
Well, of course, that's not what the district court said. He said he was vague about the time period. And that's what
it would certainly wouldn't be the most precise way to describe it. Perhaps the judge thought that that was less than a wholehearted assertion on his part.
Possibly, Judge Ripple, but what the district court said was that he was vague about that, and he was not vague. that he was in his presence all evening. He never left the bar. If you, you can see where I spelled out the testimony, of course, you all have the transcript. Mr. Reneal Smith said that he was in his presence all evening. He could not have possibly left for 15 or 20 minutes, or Mr. Smith would have noticed that. They played cards, they shot darts, they drank all evening, and I see my time is up. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Smith. Mr. Lloyd?
Hey, please support. My name is Richard Lloyd. I was the trial counsel both for the original charge of the defendant, the appellant being a felon in possession of the firearm, and for the revocation hearing. And it's the government's position that the judgment of sentencing by the district court revoking the appellant's supervised release for home invasion and aggravated battery should be affirmed. The standard of review in this case is clear error. It is not trial de novo. In in Anderson versus City of Bessemer, City of North Carolina, the Supreme Court points out that in a situation where the district court or the trial court is the finder of fact, that it would be a waste of judicial resources to have a three-judge panel try the case de novo.
Oh, here we are, though, and we're halfway through the oral argument after spending time on the briefs and all. What do you do with this problem of the witness who says, hey, the guy was with me all night, including that crucial 45-minute period?
Yeah, I think
judge,
it's...
And the judge says it was vague. I mean, did Ms. Smith have a point? That doesn't sound...
Well, I think it's a question of credibility. You heard both Mr. Smith's testimony, and you heard Janet Rhodes' testimony. There was no motive for her to falsify her testimony regarding Curtis Ferrer. There was just absolutely no reason for her to come to district court and say that a person other than the person who actually hit her in the head with a pistol and kicked open her door was the person who was getting supervised release.
But your colleague says that's not vague testimony. It may not be credible testimony, but it certainly wasn't vague. The judge was under a misapprehension as to the substance of the testimony.
Yeah, I think that where there is plausible evidence in the record, look into the evidence in its entirety, and if there are two permissible views, it can never be clear error.
Well, where is it in the transcript where Smith is vague? I mean, the court reaches that conclusion on the time period, but, you know, can you point us to the transcript where Smith is vague? Or does Smith say, as I understand it, exactly what he says, that those time periods were covered?
Yeah,
that's
Go ahead. I believe the finding that the district court made was that Mr. Smith's testimony, as well as Ms. Schuler's testimony, was biased.
Well, he said he was a little vague about what the defendant did between 10:45 and 11:45. That's the part that she's focusing in on, because what she's saying is that the witness was very clear as to what he was doing during that time period. So she's making the vagueness argument, and then where he talks about Smith being part of the three-man posse was just speculation. So that's where she's saying there's no evidence to support that, and that he was wrong on the vague conclusion.
I think what the district court hung its hat on was the question of Mr. Smith being biased, rather than the vagueness question. It was the bias question. We have two witnesses who testified to two different things. Mr. Smith obviously had a bias. He's a very close friend of the appellant. Ms. Rhodes, having no connection to the appellant in any way, had no reason to falsify her testimony and to accuse an innocent person. It's obvious from the testimony of Christopher Riccolioso, who was not there but who went to the apartment on May the 1st, that the door had been kicked in. And even Ms. Smith, in her closing, told the court that she had no doubt that Ms. Rhodes had been assaulted on April 29th.
So then in response to that question, in terms of Smith's testimony, are you conceding then that there was...
I'm not conceding, but I'm stating that...
You're saying it doesn't matter.
It does not matter.
Credibility is the issue, and Rhodes was credible.
That's correct, Your Honor. And particularly when a credibility determination is involved, there should be a reversal only under exceptional circumstances such as impossibility. There's no question that it was possible for the defendant to have gone to Ms. Rhodes' apartment. There was a time gap of from 10:50 to 11:45. when Doris Gore came back, during which period of time that he could have committed the offense. I think bottom line is that Judge Herman was there. He listened to the had an opportunity to gauge the demeanor and listen to the tone of the voices of the witnesses, which is important in making a credibility determination.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is that it? Okay, thank you, Mr. Lloyd. Ms. Smith, how much time does she have? 30 seconds?
You know, just the one point I want to respond to that that the government raised was that Janet Rhodes had no motive to put these crimes on my client. And that's not true at all. If you read the transcript below, it was my contention and my client's contention that, in fact, his son, my client's son, is the one that committed these crimes. Janet Rhodes' sister was pregnant with my client's son's baby at the time. Janet Rhodes called the police, and the 911 call says, my sister's ex-boyfriend is here and just broke in my house. By the time she spoke to the police later in Krista Rigliosa the next day, she realized that she might very well be sending the father of her sister's baby to jail or to prison for these charges, and it got changed. So Janet Rhodes had a motive. And this was brought out, and the police report indicates that's what she originally said. My sister's ex-boyfriend, Janet Rhodes, the victim's sister, was pregnant with my client's son's baby. And that was a motive for changing the story later on and saying my client did it instead of the real perpetrator. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Smith and Lloyd. Next case.